The sun was brilliant through the small windows. The walls were very thick, the windows were very small, there wasn't much of a view. But from what I could see inside that fort built in the 1600s, what I could see out that tiny window was mesmerizing. Bright colored fishing boats bobbing in the gentle waves. Intricate fish nets drying on a beach. Local folks in bold patterned fabrics talking to each other with much enthusiasm. The sea sparkling as it was kissed by the ocean. I couldn't see much, but what I could see was abundant life and the possibility of even more life. That harbor sang of alive and hope. The harbor was full of all that made for life. Outside was that harbor and that ocean and all that it offered for life. But inside that building, my heart broke and I fell to my knees. I saw that harbor and all that it offered from the position of those who had been in that building hundreds of years before, chained to the floor and to each other. Any view they had of that water was of despair and devastation. I was in Cape Coast, Ghana, in the fort that was built and used for the slave trade. I looked at the harbor and I could feel deep in my gut that it could be used as a force for life or for death. And my heart alternately soared with the possibility of what was out there and crushed with the horror of what had happened. There was this spot of water and earth created with the opportunity to flourish, and it became a place of oppression, dehumanizing, profiteering. The clashing of those opposites brought a gushing of tears and prayer. Seeing what God has given us for life and how we have lost our way. I haven't ever been able to let go of that memory. It's painful and harsh to hold on to, but I'm grateful that I have it. I want it to continue to shape my life and my passion. It's an extreme scene for me, an extreme scene of a particularly horrific part of our history. But it's not something that can never happen again. It's an extreme scene. But sometimes it is in the extremes that we are spurred from complacency into action. It's an extreme scene. And I hold that scene in my memory, the horror of the slave trade, in tension with the abundant life that could be. The abundant life that's offered and provided by our God. That harbor was full of the things that make for life in the 1600s as well as it is today, or it was when I was there. It could have been a place of feeding, caring, sharing, generosity. But people used it for devastation and oppression. Pursuit of profit with an F, and denial of the profits of our sacred story. That harbor could be used in a variety of ways. I could see the life-giving option, and I could feel what had been a deadening option. That was a literal truth in a specific geographic place. But I hold that and think of that as I consider the poetic truth in the water that is in today's gospel story. In that story, we are back thousands of years before the horror of the African slave trade. We are north of Ghana and inland from the coast on the lake, on the shores of Lake Jasenerat. We are with Peter and his fishing friends who have this body of water from which to feed people and bring life. At least that is their hope. But it hadn't worked out so well for them the night before. Peter had worked hard and there was no catch. He is there on the shore cleaning up the nets and getting ready to rest. Each twinge of a weary muscle, a reminder of the labor and the lack of yield. That damp tunic rubbing on his ankles, reminding him of the failure of the harbor to produce what he had wanted. But just a few more things to tend, and then he could rest. Well-deserved rest. It had been hard, demanding, frustrating, lacking. He's almost done. Peter, that rabbi wants to use your boat. That rabbi who's been getting a lot of attention. That rabbi who's been making God's love real and accessible. That rabbi who has been welcoming outsiders and outcasts. That rabbi who has been healing what was believed to be beyond healing. That rabbi wants your boat. You thought you were going home. He wants your boat. And our sacred story goes on. Peter lets Jesus use his boat. Jesus uses it as a floating pulpit. Jesus finishes up his teaching. The crowds have been blessed, and he is getting out of the boat. Peter can soon drag it away from the waterline and finally go home. Except, push out into deep water and let your nets out. Are the instructions that come from Jesus. And I imagine Peter thinking, what? Wait, no. No, go home and renew. Not just let me use your boat and my stuff, but now, after all that, go out into deep water, away from the certainty and safety of shore, and use my worn-out arms to cast nets into the water that gave us nothing last night. With you, Jesus? Wait, what? Why does Peter do this work when he knows from his own experience that it's going to be futile? What is it about Jesus that has Peter deny his exhaustion and frustration and do it? Okay, not without telling Jesus first that it's not going to work, but still he does it. And our story says there was a huge haul of fish, and Peter had an aha moment. Peter felt in his gut that he was in the presence of something. Peter pulled up fish, literally in the story, but also was flooded with awe and reverence that changed his life. What is it about Jesus that got Peter to do that? The story doesn't tell us. On purpose, is my opinion. On purpose, so that we don't limit what Jesus offers to the thing that speaks to Peter. What the story says is that Jesus invited and Peter responded. What had been without life and a future, when he was on his own, became overflowing with abundance when he partnered with Jesus. This is way less drastic than the harbor at Cape Coast, but it is similar. The same water approached in different ways, and the different ways of approach yield different results. Connected to Jesus, there was awe. There was abundance. There was literal and figurative food. So much literal food that they had to call for help to manage the nets and stay afloat. So much that it had to be shared and become communal. Something happened out in the deep, and when they got back to shore, Peter rearranged his life to follow Jesus and become a part of that ministry. Peter joined in, giving what he had so that others could experience the love of God. Peter was at the root of what became the church. The gathering of people who have worked really hard and often caught nothing, who have weary muscles, and who, despite that truth, say yes to Jesus and push out into the deep. People who rearrange their lives to stay close to the love, the hope, the peace, the promise. People who seek to use the harbors of their lives and this world for life, for compassion, for feeding. People. People. Not superheroes, not Disney characters, but people. Frederick Buechner says, Jesus made his church out of human beings with more or less the same mixtures in them of cowardice and guts, of intelligence and stupidity, of selfishness and generosity, of openness of heart and sheer cussedness as you would be apt to find in any of us. Buechner goes on to add, the reason he made his church out of human beings is that human beings were all there was to make it out of. In fact, as far as I know, human beings are all there is to make it out of still. It's a point worth remembering, he says. We aren't in Africa in the 1600s or in Galilee when Jesus is beginning his ministry. The landscape, the challenges, the threats are different today. But we are still filled with the basic question. How will we use the metaphorical and literal harbors entrusted to us? How will we respond to Jesus' nudging of us to go deep? How will we open ourselves to let the grace fill us and knock us to our knees in awe, aware of our personhood and the mystery and the presence of the Holy? Will we rearrange our lives to be part of this life-giving ministry, making obvious and real the life-giving love of God? That harbor in Cape Coast was as full of possibility for life in the 1600s as it was when I saw it 10 years ago. 400 years ago, people chose to use it for personal profit at others' horrific expense. It could have been used differently. We have similar choices before us. We have the chance to open to God, to be filled with that love, and to serve the world. We have the chance to use all that we have been given to bring life and to help others experience God's love, and to join together to tend what can be overflowing nets of compassion and justice. We have the choice, and God will give us what we need to respond. Amen.